Konnichiwa to all our listeners and those of you watching on YouTube. Just who will win the Rugby World Cup? Who will be the top try scorer? How far will England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales get? And how much Japanese do I actually know? All that and more, it's rugby, only better.
My favourite lane. I always said the next one.
Look like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Yes, hello and welcome to Rugby Only Better. We're looking ahead to the Rugby World Cup. Betfair has managed to unite four of the top podcasters about rugby for England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And they're going to be with us throughout the tournament. They have got previews up on betting.betfair of their respective nations. They're going to be coming in with a few selections. We're going to have a couple of more podcasts and lots more to come from that. So let's introduce the lads. I'm going to go left to right for those of you who are watching up on YouTube. Well, my left to right anyway. Gavin Casey is going to speak to us about Ireland. Of course, he works for the 42.ie. Tim Parker's going to speak to us about all things England. He works for the Eggheads. JV here beside me is going to talk all things Wales. And of course, he also works for the Egg Chasers. Down at the end there, Dave Leslie, you're going to speak about Scotland. He works for the Thistle. Before we get started, lads, let's look at those opening prices as of right now as we film. New Zealand 11-8, England 4-1, South Africa 9-2, Ireland 9-1, Wales 11-1, Scotland are 50s. There's a few in between Scotland as well and Wales, but we won't mention them.
Good right value now. At 50-1.
Good value at 50-1. It's a very exciting tournament. It's been a bit blown wide open. JB, let's start with you. It's been a little bit wide open with some of the recent years, shall we say. Ireland beating New Zealand, the Six Nations, then the way it went. It's a tough one to call, isn't it?
It is a tough one to call because I think everyone's talking about how strong the teams are. I'd look at it through the other end of the telescope, which is how flawed everyone is. Every one of these teams has a weakness that can be exploited. As strong as they all are, everyone can be beaten.
Okay, Tim, you agree?
Yeah, and just generally, I'm absolutely buzzing about the competition. It's what I like about Eddie Jones's England is it just makes nations which already hate England hate us a little bit more. What those countries don't realise is that just makes it more satisfying if England do well. Right, so thanks.
There's absolutely loads, of course, to get involved with on Betfair. We'll have handicaps and match odds and all that, but just, you know, anytime try score or first try score, we're going to have a couple of specials on every single day as well. So lots to get involved. And Gavin, it really is because there are dark horses, there are favourites, there's teams coming from everywhere for this World Cup and anyone could get involved with the way it's all stacked as well with, you know, South Africa and New Zealand being one side and, you know, a few others on the other.
Yeah, there's, as JB pointed out, pretty much every team has flaws. I think it'll actually be a terrible tournament in terms of quality. no, I don't. It really will be fascinating to see how it plays out. Look, it's the same as pretty much every World Cup, isn't it? When the World Cup rolls around every 4 years, the top eight teams in the world tend to get their houses in order, or at least six or seven of them do. Like even France, who we've been writing off for the last 4 years, and rightly so, based on what they've been producing in the Six Nations and in summer and November, look like they actually might make a dent in this tournament. And that's what makes the World Cup exciting, is teams like France kind of coming from nowhere. We've seen Argentina do in the past, maybe make a semi-final or a final out of nowhere. So I'm really looking forward to it, yeah.
Yeah, so Dave, finally to you, I suppose, look at those odds, really. Outright winner, 11-8, the All Blacks. They were odds on 6 months ago. England have come from nowhere to be second favourites of 4-1. Not nowhere, Tim, I know. You know what I mean. South Africa, 9-2. They've shot up since the Rugby Championship. Ireland are drifting at 9s. 11s, Wales, it's 14th bar. It's a really exciting tournament, well, for all of us except Gavin.
Obviously the Scottish fans that are going to clean up at 50-1. I mean, I think the big story there is, I think South Africa's sort of changed in the last 2 years. Razi Erasmus going back over there, making the big changes, bringing back in the European players, and just the real pace at which they have gotten so much better, that huge physicality that they bring. And that's obviously dented the New Zealand title chase in the Rugby Championship and for the World Cup as well. So I think that's where you want to look. I would say lots of people are saying that eight teams can win it. I don't think eight teams can win it, but I do think that top eight, anyone can beat anybody on their day. I think your winner is probably going to come from New Zealand, South Africa, or grudgingly, England.
Okay. Well, look, England is actually the first team that we're going to focus in on. So we're going to focus in on England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. We're going to give each of you a chance in 60 seconds to say how far you think they're going to get in the tournament. And then we'll all join in to bash what you said. This is Rugby Only Better. Okay, Tim, we are going to start with England. We have to. They are second favourites at the moment for the tournament. And they're looking pretty good after a decent enough Six Nations and a a pretty good build-up as well. And you do like them these days, don't you?
I do. I'm not sure second favourites. I don't know how comfortable I feel about that. I think South Africa are higher up the pecking order for me. However, I'm delighted England are back at another World Cup, because there was no World Cup in 2015. Nope. So it's been a bit of a while. Yes, England are better. We've got an incredible squad. The depth of the squad is capable. I just think England have got a bad half in them. And so to go seven games is going to be, I think, too much. When you look at the route, I really like that it builds up slowly. You've got Tonga in the USA, but then, you know, you're playing Argentina, then France, then Wales or Australia, then South Africa or New Zealand to get to a final. England have proven that they can beat any of those teams and will, but one bad half of rugby and they have been a bit erratic within games. I'm concerned they won't go the distance for that reason.
Are you thinking of like the second half against Wales in a World Cup, or the second half against Scotland?
Funny you brought that one up. Yeah.
I believe that was brought up.
Exactly, but there's no doubt. The issue is we're going into a competition that's going to be really hard with seven massive games, and we're already carrying injuries to key players. And in guys like Manu Tuilagi and Billy Vunipola, there is no replacement. If one of those two gets crocked, I just think...
Could be trouble. 5-2 to reach the final, 4-1 to win the tournament.
Final, yes. Oh,
do you think they're third favourites behind New Zealand and South Africa?
The third favourites scale of the group.
Would you accept
that? I was looking
at... No, they're not. Having in front of me.
Sorry.
The winning price that I think is undervalued at the minute is Wales at 9-1. I'd take that. I don't think...
11-1.
Wales are 11.
11, yeah. 11. You're in Ireland's price there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
11.
Stop reading my notes.
Like, nearly three times the price of England for Wales, I think, is a steal at the minute. And I don't think that's the gap between those sides. When you look at the home nation sides, I think there's not a lot to choose between Wales and England. And I don't see England at 4-1.
Gavin, just going across the Irish Sea, how does everyone in Ireland see the English chance?
I think actually people in Ireland expect England to have a great World Cup, because if you expect that going into the tournament, it sort of takes away from the pain of the reality when it happens. But in reality, like, England have given us two absolute tonkings this year alone. So
that's true, yeah.
You have to be pretty high on their chances. It doesn't mean you have to enjoy it, but you have to be realistic. And I, in fairness, I actually agree with Tim in that, just purely because their route to a potential final is so tough, it's kind of incomprehensible to imagine any team getting over all of those hurdles. I think, though, with England's strength and depth and with the way they play the game, and I do think, like, just sheer brute force and belligerence is going to win this World Cup, they, along with South Africa, are probably the two teams that would be, if any teams, would be capable of getting over all of those hurdles and getting the job done.
Are you nodding, Jeppe?
No,
I heard a...
Well, I'm nodding at the amazing eloquence of Gavin. However, here's where I stand on England. They're massive in basically two areas: the pack and also their press coverage. So, you know, when you hear so much about a team, you inevitably start to believe all the hype surrounding it. You start to believe things like Owen Farrell is a calm, cool, collected fly half. You start to believe that they are a cohesive unit and not a team based purely on talent. So I do agree with Tim in the sense that they are dangerous, and, you know, same with Gavin, they are dangerous, but they're very, very fickle. And I'm not entirely sure you should be so confident about them getting out of the group, let alone winning the tournament.
To be fair, Tim was playing down their chances. It's going to be fascinating to see how we all talk up every other country.
I've been burned many times before by being hubris is a painful thing, as England have found out in previous World Cups. But, I was more worried about our pool a year ago.
Yes.
Argentina, I'm confident now. See, there you go. I've said something that can bite me in the backside.
Typical.
Can I look at the pool the different way? You like the run in, but you've got your two easiest games up first. You've had sort of, you know, Ireland weren't even at the races when you smashed them at Twickenham. Do you think this England team's going to come in cold to that big game against Argentina, because you're going to be steamrolling, presumably, the USA and Tonga in the two games before that? Sorry, not Tonga. Who's your other?
Yeah.
USA and Tonga in the two games before that. Then you're going to come up against the proper team. And, you know, you've had sort of four or five warm-up games, but none of them have been proper.
No, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Yes, I quite like that it's ramping up slowly. Yeah. And so that cohesiveness you talk about England can get through those first couple of games, I'd much rather have it like New Zealand and South Africa have got, where they play each other, then they can just chill out.
Can I talk about France for 2 seconds?
Yeah, I'll add. I'll add.
Thanks. So here's the thing with England and France. We know what England are because they've been building for this for 4 years. And two years ago, they played an absolutely dreadful France in Paris and they got smashed. They got manhandled, they got melted in contact. And that was a relatively good, well-organised England team against an absolute sham, which was France. Now, that's fast forward. You've got this result, which I think is a little bit of an aberration, at Twickenham. But France were not far off from beating Wales that then went on to win the Grand Slam. So, I mean, that is the massive a massive stumbling block for England, because I think France are big enough to take away what they love, which is front football.
I like the way you had to meander to your point. They beat them, but once upon a time they beat them. Two players that have been involved lately that I mentioned that weren't involved in that game are absolutely fundamental. Billy Vunipola, Manu Tuilagi, they are game changers.
Yeah.
We're going to move on, because we're going to speak about Wales, JB. You're going to give it, we can join in again. We have to leave England there. Tim, last word, reach the final?
No.
They don't reach the final?
No. But as I say,
quarterfinals?
Semifinals, yes.
Semifinals and out.
Yeah. Sad to say, I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple of moments where we're going to talk all things Wales. Welcome back to Rugby Only Better. JB, you're going to talk to us about Wales.
Yes, indeed I am.
Ready?
Yes. Is that my introduction?
You've been writing a few things there.
Yeah, I have. Because Wales are a pretty complicated team. They're complicated mostly, I think, for the fact that they're not quite as talented as everyone else. I don't think that in terms of just raw playing talent, they can match the likes of England, Wales. They're probably equivalent to Scotland, to be fair. That said,
I don't think that everyone's going to agree with Gavin. You're already looking like you don't agree with that, but we'll let you keep going for now.
Okay. That being said, they are the best coached team in the Six Nations by a country mile. And I think that's going to be the difference. So, you know, when you look at other teams within the tournament, I will pick on England again. That is a talent-focused team. They need their talent to perform in order to win. Well, Warren Gatland doesn't necessarily need that. I mean, he's shown it time and time again. He's gone to a World Cup before, where his fly half went down and then showed up with Reece Priestland and made a semi-final. I mean, that's pretty remarkable stuff. He showed up to the last World Cup by going to Doncaster, finding a prop, and only in the end been beaten by South Africa, who turned out to be pretty good. So the story about Wales here is more a story about Warren Gatland. This is going to be his last tournament. Warren Gatland has won pretty much everything he can possibly win.
Last tournament with Wales. Next one.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So, you know, he might still win a World Cup. Will it be with Wales? I think he'll do something rather special. Now, if things go according to plan, Wales should get out of the group. The problem they're going to have is Fiji, because the Fijians, unfortunately, unlike all the Tier 1 nations, do not have as much time together as, say, Ireland do. So the fact that you play Fiji after they've had all this time means they're going to be incredibly dangerous. They beat Fiji, they're through. The likelihood is they are going to go up against England, probably. All right, if England go through, I think that they can do that. I just don't think that they can get through the semi. So semi would be the place where I think Wales will end up.
But if I say that, if I look at the markets, right, Wales are 11-1. To win the tournament, they are 11-4 to reach the final. That is huge difference. So people are saying and people are backing them to reach a final. And Gavin, you like them to reach a final, don't you?
Maybe not quite a final, but I think one of the interesting things about Wales, like Wales are probably 11-1 versus Ireland being 9-1 as outright winners, purely on the back of those two summer tests, those two warm-up games in which Ireland won. But I think there were caveats to each of those victories for Ireland. The first one being that in that test in Cardiff, you know, there weren't many frontliners involved. I think Warren Gatland and Joe Schmidt had a couple of conversations a few weeks prior and sort of agreed upon who they'd play, a kind of a second string team each. They were less, probably in contact less in the lead up to the last one, where Ireland were probably more dominant and it gave Ireland sort of cause for hope. And yet Wales were essentially on the piss 3 or 4 nights before that for a kind of a send-off session. Like, their preparation has been done for a long time. So you can kind of write those two games off for me. I think Wales are, I'd actually agree with JB, I think they're the best coached team in the tournament, probably pound for pound, in the sense that, as you pointed out, JB, like, man for man, talent-wise, they don't have the same as a lot of the other teams, but sort of in a synergic effect, they're unbelievably good. I do think like Gatlin, Schmidt, Jones, like they're all sort of Hansen, Razzie, they're all the best coaches in the world, really. I think
they're
it's
all
very
pretty
difficult.
Good.
Yeah,
when
it's
you
difficult.
Them, they're
it's,
all pretty good.
It's like it's yeah, flavor of the month. Essentially, it's whoever's going best will be named best coach in the world. But I think Wales, the way they're set up with that Sean Edwards defense, with the fitness regime that they undertook, literally at club level upwards from last, what was it, August, September? Like they've been building towards this for a long time. I think they're they as a collective and Gatlin will be just kind of quietly confident that they will have enough kind of drudgery in them to just blunt force, blast teams out of it and keep chucking away.
And that's exactly right. It's the blunt force aspect. Wales can definitely do that. My question is, where is that absolute top-end talent? Where is that Finn Russell or that Bowden Barrett? Yeah. And they
but
simply don't have that.
But Gatlin, as you say, they're so well coached. That's what he has done. He's assembled these pieces that he's got. And it's very simple, their game plan. Mm-hmm. Incredibly simple. And I mean that in a good way. And incredibly effective and consistent. And that's why when I look at England, yes, they've got way more individual talent, but they're prone to these 20-minute lapses, which can you're out of a World Cup. Mm. Wales and Gatlin sides, generally, when it matters, don't do that. The only thing with Wales I love is that they get to play all the teams that they have lost in previous World Cups.
Yeah. If only they had Western Samoa.
I think the nature in which Wales won the Six Nations, that's fairly quite limited, didn't score tons of points, is exactly the sort of way that World Cups are typically won. And actually, I think the Anscombe injury, as sad as it was, you know, Dan Biggar, who is just a big game player, they can revert to sort of type and play really simple, great structured rugby, kick points all day long, amazing centres. Like, I think they'll go deep. I don't think they'll win it, but I think they are very well suited to win a World Cup.
Yeah, and the one player they are missing, you mentioned Anscombe, I don't think that's as big a loss as Faletau. Faletau's huge.
When
you talk about where's their top class talent, he was their top class.
They're 11 to 10 to go out with the quarterfinal, Wales. 2 to 1 to go out to the semi-final, 5 to 1 to be runner up, and 11 to 1 to win it now.
I like that. I like them at 11 to 1.
Yeah. They're not bad. Yeah. I'm still going with semi-final, though.
Okay.
I think the difference will be literally what we've mentioned, that just that tiny little bit of top level, like elite level talent is what might make the difference in terms of actually winning a World Cup.
In like the back of my glorious thought here would be Dan Biggar versus Bowden Barrett. And yeah, sure, Bowden Barrett makes the occasional break, only to be swallowed up by the Sean Edwards defence, but misses all his kicks. Dan Biggar does not miss kicks.
Yeah.
Does not miss kicks. But let's see what happens.
Okay, well, we all feel Wales go far in the tournament. Well, up next, we're going to speak about the world's number one ranked team. Gavin's going to talk Ireland. We're back on Rugby Only Better as we look ahead to the Rugby World Cup, and I've gathered here with four of the Top Nations podcasters, so it's Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, and beyond, and some of the best bets for the tournament. And it's time, as I said before, Gav, to talk about the world number one ranked team who are going to win the Rugby World Cup at a huge price of 9-1 and make us all wealthy. Explain why.
We have the distinct privilege of being the
world's number one ranked
team who nobody fancies will get beyond a quarterfinal in what is essentially an eight-man tournament. Yeah. So it's a very interesting run-in for Ireland in that sense. It's been such a peculiar summer when you consider the first warm-up game against Italy. They didn't exactly blow any doors down. People were a little bit concerned, really, by how underwhelming they were. They go down to Portugal on this warm weather training session or regime for a fortnight. Come back, Twickenham is essentially a stop-off. They get absolutely blown out the gap. Record defeat. The whole country is in a state of panic. Sirens are going off. Like, people are talking about 2007 again. And all of a sudden, like, Joe Schmidt is this guy. It's like, Jesus, is the guy cracking up? Like, what's happened to this guy? He was meant to be he was World Coach of the Year in 2018, the year when we beat the All Blacks and we were really the best team in the world, you know. A week later, you're good at Cardiff, get a decent win with a second string team, as we mentioned earlier. Another week on, beat Wales in a sort of a more competitive game, more intense game, and suddenly the whole country's like, you know what, we might actually win the whole thing again, you know. So it just shows how fickle the entire thing is. I think the realistic expectation for Ireland is to top the pool, firstly. I think in the pool opener against Scotland, as dangerous as Scotland are, particularly in broken field, if Ireland box clever, they've shown enough over the last couple of years, bar that blip in 2017 in Murrayfield, that they just have Scotland's number, as a lot of teams do away from Murrayfield. I don't think Scotland really have shown that they're capable of stringing together a complete performance against an elite level team away from home, and obviously Japan is pretty far from home.
Handicap on that has moved to 9 points now. That's pretty high.
It's probably a bit too high, to be honest. Yeah. And like, it sounds like I'm writing off Scotland, and that's because I am.
David's writing off Scotland.
But at the same time, like, obviously we know, like, as we've seen in World Cups, as we've seen in Six Nations plenty of times, like, it's kind of any given Sunday at the same time. The way Ireland's pool shapes up, like, the fact that they've got Scotland first, then Japan, which is another tough test, obviously the hosts in front of, you know, however many thousand people, they can kind of taper off with those last two games against Russia and Samoa, and suddenly you're going into a quarterfinal in pretty reasonable physical nick, you'd hope, barring catastrophic injuries in the first two games where you're going to be playing your frontliners. So it's a complete opposite of the last World Cup, in which Argentina blew us out the gap when we were missing Sean O'Brien due to a siding, but then also Johnny Sexton, Paul O'Connell, Peter Romani to injury. You should be going into a quarterfinal fresh, and it's laid up really nicely in that regard. And then you look at the prospective quarterfinal opponents.
Yeah,
and it's either New Zealand or South Africa. And I just don't think Ireland really have. I mean, it's almost lunacy, really, to say, like, I think the better option there is New Zealand in a World Cup quarterfinal. Like, could you imagine even saying that 2 years ago?
Yeah, but can I just throw the problem out here for you, which is, yes, you are right, because you can beat New Zealand, whereas I don't think you can beat South Africa.
Mm.
But same which you pointed out before, which is, yeah, you can beat New Zealand, but at what cost? I mean, by the time you beat New Zealand, are you then a spent force?
I completely agree. Like, firstly, I don't think we will beat New Zealand in a World Cup quarterfinal. I think these November tests in which Ireland have won, like 2016, 2018, monumental games and, you know, sort of historic moments for Irish rugby. And yet, let's be honest, like, the Southern Hemisphere teams are ripe for the picking in November. Like, I think if you want to go and win a World Cup and prove that you're sort of ready to beat these teams in a World Cup, you've got to be going down there and winning in the summer, you know. Like, for Ireland, firstly, South Africa, not a chance. I just don't think they can stand up to them physically. I actually don't think many teams can, but Ireland definitely can't. New Zealand, maybe because Ireland psychologically have laid down those markers over the last couple of years, they themselves would believe. Like, they certainly won't fear New Zealand. And great World Cup teams, generally speaking, you go back to like England in 2003, they laid down those markers of having beaten those Southern Hemisphere teams nearly home and away in the lead up to that tournament. Ireland have sort of done something similar. They've done a lot of firsts. They, you know, they've won a first tour in Australia in 35 odd years. They won against New Zealand for the first time, beat them in Dublin for the first time, won a test match in South Africa the first time. Now it's like, can they get over that quarterfinal hurdle for the first time?
Well,
the answer is no.
If they think they are the world number one ranked team, where are they then? Where is this team?
I think they're kind of equal third with England and Wales.
I disagree. I actually have them just outside of that sort of top four. I'm not trying to do a carry on it, Kieran, where you play down your own team's chances. I genuinely just think, based on the last year and also what it's going to take to win this World Cup, Ireland are a little bit lacking in key areas. What they do have, like, their greatest asset, apart from probably their halfbacks and James Ryan, is Joe Schmidt. And you can never underestimate him in a one-off game. The problem is, to win a World Cup, it's not a one-off game.
Dave, we haven't heard from you on Ireland. And there, of course, you'll speak about Scotland in a few moments, but they are in your group.
They are in our group. I think we're getting, from a Scotland perspective, I think playing them first up is absolutely when you want them. I think hopefully we'll catch them cold. I think Scotland's away form absolutely is a fair comment, but you've obviously missed our big win in Georgia or our unbeaten tour to Japan 2 years ago. So we know how to do it in the East. But I think Ireland, they're not the team they were in 2018. I think you mentioned 2017 as a sort of aberration at Murrayfield. I think I was looking at the two sides that went out that day. The packs are not hugely different. I think there's key collisions there. I think Scotland, a lot of these players have beaten Ireland. And I think at Murrayfield in the Six Nations this year, bar Scotland giving you a 14-point head start, you know, I don't think there is a huge gulf between these teams.
I agree, yeah.
As ever, I think, can Scotland get parity with that Ireland pack? And then, you know, behind the scrums, it's exciting. And can Johnny Sexton stay on the pitch for 80 minutes? He was a targeted man at Murrayfield. He made it like 25 minutes. He doesn't look as strong as he used to. I'm not, you know, saying that we should, you know, go after him illegally, but he's a targeted man. And if you take Johnny Sexton out of that Ireland team early,
You still win at Murrayfield.
Legality.
I see Ireland winning the opening game. I see them winning the pool. But one of my earliest memories of rugby, and sorry to bring it up, was 1991, Michael Leiner at Lansdowne Road, as it was. Last minute try.
And I wasn't born, so it's all good.
And I think, death.
Oh, that's one way to go back.
Death, taxes, and Ireland getting knocked out in a quarterfinals.
They are odds on to be knocked out in the quarterfinals. Yeah. We all seem to agree that they probably will, unfortunately, get knocked out. But the big question right now is, who covers a handicap of 9 points, Scotland or Ireland? Dave?
Scotland.
JB?
Scotland.
Ireland will take Scotland by more than 9.
Gav?
Scotland.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right, we're going to talk Scotland when we come back on Rugby Only Better. We're back on Rugby Only Better, and the last of the nations that we're going to do a deep dive in, Dave, is Scotland. And, well, we're having a little chat off camera about everything, and you've got confidence, don't you?
It is the hope that kills. You know, I had confidence after we beat Ireland and Wales in the 2017 Six Nations, then we went to Twickenham and lost by 60 points. You know, like, this is what being a Scotland fan is. But I think the two things that I think are undisputed facts coming into this World Cup, this is the best squad, 31-man squad that Scotland have ever sent to a World Cup. We have depth everywhere apart from at loosehead prop, which we'll come back to. And also, I think that the Scotland-Ireland opener, given everything that's happened in the last 5 or 6 years and all the improvements Scotland have made, this is one of the biggest games in Scottish rugby history if we are going to go on and sort of fulfill that promise of a growing rugby nation. We have flattered to deceive so much over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, I think we've run New Zealand close at Murrayfield. We've beaten all the big nations apart from New Zealand at home. But that away record is really troubling. And if Scotland are, I mean, looking almost beyond the World Cup, if Scotland are going to sort of kick on as a nation and build on this promise and this exciting young group of players, we've got to register a big win against a big team on a big stage. And I think Ireland coming up is really exciting because I think Ireland are not in the best form, as we've just discussed. Scotland have had a pretty decent, I think is the general consensus, warm-up set. You know, we went down to France, first game, everyone was caught cold. We looked absolutely shocking. We got 40 points put on us. We looked awful. France came back to Murrayfield. We put in a pretty gritty performance, managed to beat them, grind them out, which was encouraging to see. And then what would have been a banana skin, I think this is what's given Scotland an awful lot of confidence. I know it sounds ridiculous. We went to Georgia and won. Now, these are games that Scotland usually trip up on. We scrape through with a last-minute penalty, a last-minute try. We put them away, 40 points away in Tbilisi, 35 back at Murrayfield. And I think it's really exciting. We can score points against anybody. The biggest issue for this Scotland team is that we average at least one try, 7 points, I think it's about 6.5 points, in the first 5 minutes of internationals conceded. So then you're starting from, you know, a handicap, and we can't afford to do that. There's lots of questions being asked about the defence coach. And, you know, give Ireland 14-point head start like we did at Murrayfield in the Six Nations, very, very difficult to come back from that. But I do think that, you know, if we can get parity up front with any of these, any team in the World Cup, when you've got Finn Russell, you've got really exciting players like Sam Johnson, Stuart Hogg, Darcy Graham coming through, 5 tries and 7 appearances for Scotland. He's about 5 foot tall, but he's so rapid. He's absolutely class. I think we can cause an awful lot of trouble. And I'm going to say, I think we're going to beat Ireland in the first game.
Okay, well, looking at prices, because if you were to beat Ireland, then you're going to probably win the pool.
I think a lot's been made in the run-up, including on the sheet you sent out yesterday saying, are Scotland heading for an early exit? I mean, I think a lot has been made.
Psychological warfare, Kieran.
They were just random questions that might be asked.
A lot has been made of the Japanese game, which is the last game in the pool, and the fact that we've only got a 4-day turnaround. I think what's been slightly overlooked is it's a 4-day turnaround to Russia, who've warmed up by losing to Italy, Connacht and Jersey, who are champions
as well.
The Southern Kings. Yeah. And so there's a 4-day turnaround from that, but there's a 13-day turnaround from the Samoa game, which is our second pool game. So you've got to look at it, I think, as the first 3 games of a Six Nations where you play Saturday, and then have 2 weeks off and play again. So the first team will play those first two games. We'll roll out the second team, which, as I say, we have depth now, apart from at Loosehead Prop. We should be able to quite handsomely beat Russia. And then the first team comes back to put away Japan.
I just want to give the guy a hug because he said this is the best Scotland squad that's ever arrived at a World Cup. Right. And man, I think they'll do well to get out of the pool.
Well, really? I mean, I think...
I think they will, yeah. But I think that's the quarterfinals is an okay result for Scotland.
I mean, I completely agree. I think when you look at what is the draws thrown up, it is South Africa and New Zealand. I think, you know, for every will in the world, I'm not sure I can look straight down that camera and say we'll beat either of them, even at Murrayfield, if they've got... Yeah.
Stephen A. Smith, go for it.
Camera team.
I don't think we'll beat them. it's a tricky thing, but... We are incrementally getting better. I think we've got to look at Ireland as the biggest game of this World Cup and then a good showing against either New Zealand or South Africa, which will give us momentum and, you know, that warm, fuzzy feeling coming into the Six Nations. I think that's what Scotland can expect.
Have you got over Australia in 2015 yet?
Never. I had tickets for the NFL. I think it was down that Saturday. I was selling my ticket with 2 minutes to go. I was like, we're through. This is it. I'm going to spend any money I've got to go to the semi at Twickenham. And I still believe we would have beaten Argentina.
You would have.
And then shipped 60 to New Zealand in the final, but we would have got a World Cup final.
I don't think you're giving yourself enough to go at in this Ireland game. I mean, in my mind, how it works is Finn Russell finishes off his whiskey, stubs out his cigar, doesn't even bother tying his shoelaces, and then it just is magic. Yeah. And that's how you get over Ireland. But there is this counter hellscape which I've been thinking of, which is you beat Ireland, Ireland beat Japan, and then last game of the group you lose to Japan, and I think that's quite a nice sort of little conundrum for you to mull over there, because you can definitely lift yourself for Ireland and. Look at the big game players. I mean, I would argue that Ireland, please feel free to disagree, do not have the guys with the natural spark of people like Hogg.
They've nothing.
Johnson. But Russell, I mean, what a player.
They've nothing like that really in their starting 15. But as we've discussed with Wales, you can go a long way in a World Cup without that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like they're just I think they're a better oiled machine than Scotland. Like Scotland...
100%. They're like the Toyota Corolla of rugby.
Jesus.
You know, it sort of doesn't break down.
Are you slagging them off?
It's not a high performance machine. You know, that's where you're going to come and stuck with this magic, and we have seen it.
But where are you coming from? Like we're going to come unstuck with it. I mean, we literally didn't come unstuck with it in Murrayfield only a few months ago, that was a pretty poor Ireland squad or Ireland side.
Well, I mean, that is the downside of inconsistency, and that's the downside of this bit of stardust which Scotland have. It is not frequent, but when it happens, it happen?
It is no, you know, I'm not giving away Gregor Townsend's game plan here to say that, you know, if you stick it up your jumper with 10-man rugby against Scotland, that is what we can't play against.
Yeah, it's one out runners.
And we will get ground down, we'll give away penalties, and smart teams will kick to the corner and things like that. But as I say...
Could I ask then, if Ireland are going to win this game, it's going to be a low-scoring game. If Scotland are going to win this game, it'd be high-scoring?
Yes. I think that's it. I think Scotland have scored tries. Although I think, again, I'm sure everybody out there watched both the Georgia tests with a lot of interest. But Scotland were a little bit smarter. They kicked corners, they kicked posts as well as scoring tries. There was talk of this mythical plan B in Gregor Townsend's sort of arsenal. You know, there's been an awful lot of criticism from me and, you know, our podcast and a lot of people that if you can't get front football and chuck it around, what does Scotland do? Now, there's been a couple of times, the France game in particular, in the warm-ups where they didn't get that and managed to eke it out. And they played very structured rugby against Georgia. Naturally, Georgia just aren't a good enough team. So that broke them down and gave us the chances. But it wasn't the sort of all-court chucking it around game that put Georgia to the sword. It was
But Japan v Scotland could be the game of the tournament.
That's the
that reason, I think absolutely, it could be the game of the tournament.
Like the way Scotland play as well, if just by chance, like... If you were to look at like what Scotland will do to Russia, Scotland will put way more points on Russia than Ireland will put on Russia, if you know what I mean. Like that's the way Scotland play. Yeah. It's just that styles make fights. And when those two teams come together, as you point out, like if you do stick it up the jumper, like I think Ireland actually produced a performance already that would with an extra sort of 10 or 15% within a World Cup context would be enough to get the job done in their last game against Wales.
Ireland are sort of struggling to maintain what they've done in the past. If you like, they're sort of on a bit of a downward slope now. A very slow downward slope.
I think they've it's been an almost a valley, but they're on the way back up. Yeah. I don't think that they can necessarily get back to the heights of last year. I think it's there's probably not enough time. What I think about Ireland is the way they prepared for the World Cup was that they went down to Portugal, ran the legs off each other for 2 weeks, and Joe Schmidt has a very deliberate plan in order to peak in time for the Scotland game. I think what we saw in Cardiff and then what we saw the following week in Dublin is that they're on the right trajectory to arrive at that peak. I want to come and give him a hug again
because in the Scotland segment we talked about Ireland loads. Poor Scotland.
We're right there. How far can Scotland get?
I think quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals, JB?
Yes, quarterfinals.
I think that they'll do well to get to the quarterfinals. No, I think they will, but I don't think you should overlook how.
So bless them, they get into the quarterfinals.
No, bless them.
Quarterfinals, like, were Celtic cousins doomed together by that draw in the quarterfinals? Exactly.
Just one last question. Will you be supporting Ireland, Scotland in the quarterfinals after England go out?
all of the other home nations have my secondary support.
So glad it's between the two of you, I have to say. We'll be back very quickly. We're going to run through some of the Rugby World Cup's top moments and the lads are going to talk some bets. Okay, guys, welcome back to Rugby Only Better. Before we talk about bets and what you guys will be doing for us over the next couple of weeks, the greatest Rugby World Cup moment, we're going to have a poll up on Twitter and we're going to ask people to vote on, but we want to get you guys' opinions. So we've whittled it down, thankfully. Don't worry, because I see you all having to start thinking very quickly there. South Africa stop Lomu to win the World Cup. Johnny Wilkinson kicks England to victory down under. New Zealand finally throw off the underachievers tag in 2011.
Not that one.
Wales stunned Twickenham in 2015.
That didn't happen.
And
from my memory.
Japan beat South Africa in 2015.
God, yeah.
Those are what we came up with. Are you following all of them or is there any more? Are they the ones?
France beating New Zealand. World record number of tackles.
Chabal facing down the hacker. That game, actually.
Wrong France beating New Zealand. I'm thinking the one with like Garb Jones, Joseph, Bernasals.
Was that 95 or 99? That was
99. Yeah. Oh, it might even be before that. Go 99. that was the first World Cup that I really paid a lot of attention to, and that was amazing.
Were you alive in that one?
You were just about.
Amazon Entomac. It was fantastic.
Ireland don't really have any great Rugby World Cup memories, really. I mean,
remember when Stephen Ferris picked up Wilgenia like
that
a rag
was very good. Yeah,
but unfortunately, that's it.
Can I just throw one out to the panel? I mean, this is one of my favourites, but I don't know how you kind of feel about this. What about the time when Chris Robshaw did that advert saying we always back ourselves at home? Yeah. Did anyone enjoy that one?
It was a world-class moment.
I enjoyed it afterwards.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one. We always back ourselves at home.
Okay. Well, that poll's going to be up on Twitter, so you can vote on it, and we'll come back with some of the results when we speak later on in the tournament. But just want to talk about some of the markets that are on offer on Betfair. You guys will all be involved in some betting previews, of course, on betting.betfair, and your team-by-team preview of your respective teams, of course, is already up and is available on betting.betfair, so you can see what you said in the article that you've now contradicted yourself on it for you guys. There's also going to be lots more. And in terms of markets, well, we've pretty much got everything. Obviously, handicap, top try score, etc. You mentioned about Pool C, and I did want to bring it up that it is a sort of a straight forecast because you can do that with the pool. So you could say Ireland first, England second. England, France in Pool C is 11 to 10. England, Argentina is 2 to 1. France, England, 11 to 2. Argentina, England, 9 to 1. And France, Argentina, 25 to 1.
Ooh.
So that is tasty. If you want to get involved in those sort of bets, they are available on Betfair. Just head to the website. There's lots to get involved in. And you can, of course, get involved in the exchange as well to back relay anything. So lots to do. But if you do like something a little bit crazy, it's always there as well. So we're going to move on. Now, the lads are going to be joining us throughout the Rugby World Cup. They're going to be mentioned on the Egg Chasers and on the Thistle. And Gavin's going to be on Twitter. And we're going to select a bet of every single round of the World Cup and then come back for the quarterfinals, the semifinals and the final. At the end of it, we'll find out who actually does know what they're talking about, gentlemen. So I've given you £20. Do you remember what your first bets are? Does everyone actually remember? Gavin, we'll start with you.
I don't remember getting £20, Kieran, to be totally honest. I actually really like the look of that. Firstly, the World Cup kicks off in earnest, I think, with South Africa versus New Zealand in that pool game, right?
Which is the one you've gone for.
Which is the one I've gone for. And the last three games between those two countries, on aggregate, it's 83-83. One win, one draw, one loss each. Like, it couldn't be closer. And my bet for that game is that it'll be a draw. I also think, just weirdly, it's too early in the tournament to decide who is the better team out of those two teams, if you know what I mean. Like, I think it'll come back around. I could see them meeting again in a final very easily. And
it's a cracking price. It's 20-1.
Even the game before, one, two, three, four games ago, was like something like 25-24 New Zealand won. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely nothing between them and hasn't been for about 2 years. You could just see them. I mean, look, you never know. It's just one of those things where if a game is close, there's every chance it's going to be a draw. And if also in the dying stages of a game, you'd probably settle for a draw in a way and just hope you meet again and look to get the job done in points difference against the rest of the teams in your pool. So, yeah, I think it's a cracking price and I think it's worth a punt.
Yeah, New Zealand v South Africa to end in a draw. It's 20-1 on Betfair at the moment. Tim, you went for one that's not actually priced up at the moment. But as always, if you see something or want to see something on the site, if you hit us up on Twitter with odds on that, we'll get a price back to you. And this one will be easy enough for the lads to do when I bring it to the traders. You can tell them.
That is a Johnny May hat-trick in the opening game. When I look back to the British and Irish Lions last tour, to think Johnny May, how he's playing now, wasn't in that squad, just demonstrates where he's come in the last 2 years. Mm. And I think he's been England's best player. I think he's primed for a standout World Cup. I mean, England's games are very tough, so maybe not the top try scorer, but if England go deep in the tournament, I think Johnny May is going to be the man that will make the difference for England. And he's someone that's not being talked about as much as other people. Even myself in the England preview earlier, I didn't mention him, and I mentioned people like Billy Vunipola and Manu Tuilagi, who are important. Johnny May has just turned himself into one of the world's... I think he'd get in a World 15 on the left wing at the moment. I think he's absolutely crucial, particularly when there have been question marks about England's back three with Elliot Daly. Is he really a top level fullback? And Anthony Watson coming back from injury. He's been so dependable in attack and defence. So, yeah, I wanted to put my money behind Johnny May hat-trick.
Johnny May hat-trick. We'll get that up for you on the website. It'll be up very shortly. I'll contact the traders. I've got a direct line, lads.
Good man.
Very good, very good. Jamie, yours is the craziest of the four. It is.
Yeah.
Well, even though the price doesn't reflect a little bit how crazy it is, did you really think this can happen?
Yeah, I do. So, I mean, there's two ways to look at this here. First of all is the simplistic way, which is I think that Japan are going to beat Russia by around 75-ish points.
Yes,
right?
More than 75 at 22-1.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, Russia, we've been over it before. They lost against Jersey. They lost against Southern Kings. And Japan are very, very well prepared. And they've got great coaches. They play nice rugby. And they're at home. And it's the opening game of a World Cup. The second way to look at it is I think this might be the biggest difference in points for a World Cup opener. Now, I don't know if I can get odds on that. I'll just stick with Japan beating Russia by 75. But to me, that sounds like a pretty good bet.
It does indeed. Now, the handicap's 40 in the game. So you've gone a lot higher. You've almost doubled the handicap. But, I mean, you're basically saying Japan minus 40 is a huge lock.
Yes.
Dave, the last one was with you. And I feel like maybe when you read the memo, you thought that you had to stick with Scotland. You didn't have to stick with Scotland.
I did feel that, yeah.
But you went, yeah. Well, you were hurt by my, could Scotland be heading for an early exit ?
I was still reeling from that, yeah.
So you went with Scotland.
Yeah, so I've gone with aforementioned lad called Darcy Graham. He's just come through the Scotland side. He's from Hoyk. He's from same rugby club as Stuart Hogg. Absolutely electric. Had a great season in Europe for Edinburgh last year. He scored 5 tries in his first 7 games for Scotland. He's just that real natural finisher that you expect on the wing. And I think he is going to break what's been a sort of monopoly on, you know, Maitland, Seymour and Hogg being Scotland's back three. I think Darcy Graham's done enough to knock Tommy Seymour out of that with his try-scoring exploits. I think he's going to score... I think I said first try scorer or at any
first
time. Try scorer on way to Scotland beating Ireland in that first game.
Okay. Well, as we're going to wrap it all up, guys, we are going to be speaking to each other over the course of the tournament, and we're going to have you back here after the group stages. You'll actually be in Japan, so I will be. We'll bring you in. We'll make sure it's at a time that's acceptable for us, not you. We'll speak then. But before we go, because we're going to have to come back to this, very quickly, Who wins the tournament? Do all four of the home nations get out of the group? And who's kind of someone that you look at top try scorer for the whole thing? Do all four nations get out of their groups? Yes, no?
No.
No. Tim, do all four nations get out of the groups?
Yes.
Gav?
Unquestionably.
Dave?
Yes.
Yes. Dave, who do you think wins the tournament?
South Africa.
JB?
South Africa.
Tim?
I'm saying South Africa. It's South Africa.
Gav?
Grand Slam, South Africa. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to change mine. I'm going to say France.
Oh, God.
No, it's every 12 years, South Africa win the tournament. Was it 95, 2007, 2019? That's just the cycle they work on.
And who's a decent shout to be the top try scorer of the tournament? Dave, who do you think? We'll be back on this now as well. So we're midway through the tournament once you come back. So pick someone good.
Having seen him cut through Scotland very handsomely this summer, I think Demi Panot for France, I think they'll go pretty well in this tournament. I think they'll shock a few people in that sort of dark horse category because they are a complete shambles most of the time, but they get themselves together for World Cups. And he's just one of those people. He's electric and he's going to score tries.
Jamie?
Panot is a great shout. So you kind of ruined it for me there.
Sorry, bud.
I'm going to have to say, I think Josh Adams is in with hell of a shout. The guy can score. And although I don't think Wales will score a lot of points per game, I think they'll be in there for a long time. So Josh Adams for me.
Can I press you?
Johnny May, I love the look of if England go deep. Mpimpi for South Africa is rapid.
Love
the sprinting speed and against some easy teams. He could just get a hatful in the pool stages.
And last call?
Yeah, I actually think, to echo what Tim was saying about Johnny May, just the fact that he could actually run in six against Tonga gives him a bit of a head start. I think he's a great show.
Okay. Gentlemen, to Dave, JB, Tim and to Gav, thank you so much for joining us today. As I said, you can join the lads all throughout the tournament. They're going to be on the Egg Chasers, the Thistle. Gavin will have all his columns. And of course, they'll be on Betfair as well. We're going to have lots of stuff from them during the course of the whole tournament. And we will come back. We're going to come back for a second one and see how it all went. Hopefully those try scorers are all doing. Hopefully all four nations get out of the group stages and we can have a right old time as well about the quarterfinals and the semi-finals and beyond. But it's betting.betfair for everything else about rugby. We hope you enjoyed the tournament as much as we do. And again, lads, thanks for dropping by. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye bye.